This week's Star Trek Discovery Recap is sponsored by True Car. When you're looking to buy a car, you want to make sure you're getting real pricing on the actual inventory. Unfortunately, a lot of times that's not the case. People configure their car online only to later find out that car is not available. With True Car, you get real pricing on the actual inventory, not just pricing offered by True Car, pricing offered from the actual dealer, and not just any dealer. A True Car certified dealer, a carefully curated network of dealers committed to transparency and offering you a competitive market price. With True Car, you can easily find the car that you want, and True Car is going to show you what other people in your area paid for the same car you're looking for. Now you know what a fair price is, and you can feel confident. Over 3 million cars have been sold to True Car users by the True Car Certified Dealer Network, and there's over 13,000 True Car Certified Dealers nationwide. True Car users also save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy that new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. Star Trek Discovery Season 1, Episode 9 is over, but we're just getting started here on Star Trek, the post-show recap. And now, here are the two guys who don't make 133 jumps a year. I'm Rob Sisterton, here with David Bloomberg. David, how are you?
Good. How are you?
David, I don't want to speak for your physical fitness. I don't do a lot of jumping.
No, I don't do much jumping either. It's not so much the going up, it's the landing at the end.
Yeah, I don't like to jump. I guess that we don't have it as bad as Stamets.
No, definitely not. Our brains continue to work the right way, even if we do jump.
Yeah, our eyes aren't changing color or anything like that as we are at the midpoint of Star Trek Discovery Season 1. Not technically, but at least this is where the artificial midpoint is, because we are on a break until the spring semester of Star Trek Discovery after a pretty exciting Season 1 mid-season finale.
Yeah, definitely. I think things definitely picked up since the last time I was on.
Yeah, which was way back in the second episode of the series, before we even got to Captain Lorca. So a lot to catch up on with you as we round out the first half of this season. David, how's everything going for you?
Pretty well. I have to tell you, I did not think we would be talking about why Cole lost so early.
Yeah. So Cole, very sad to see him go. He ends up dying at the hands of Captain Lorca and company at the end of this episode, as we really got to figure out what was going on with the Klingon cloaking device and much more here in this episode. So this is episode number 9, Into the Forest I Go. These episode titles are so wacky. Does that mean anything to you? Was that like Michael Burnham going into the Klingon ship?
You know, on After Trek, they explained what it was, but through a combination of things, I didn't really get it. One, the Skype with their writers was absolutely horrible.
Mm-hmm.
They tried it twice. It was horrible. They finally brought them back later on and fixed it. But it's the line in some poem or play, or I don't know. It couldn't keep my attention, I'm afraid.
Okay, so yeah, they've really struggled with the episode titles, I feel like, in Star Trek Discovery. Not to nitpick that aspect of the show too much, but David, we end up at a big cliffhanger as Discovery. I don't know if this is like shades of Star Trek Voyager, but they appear to be like off the grid at the end of this episode. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much you want to jump ahead. I did notice a couple things that...
Black alert, let's go!
Black alert, I mean, you want to jump ahead to what I noticed?
Go!
Well, when Lorca was entering the coordinates in his nav panel, so you saw the nav panel come up, and if you could zoom in or pause, as I did on my computer, for that last jump, he hit some button that said override, and the destination said unknown.
Hmm. So you think that Lorca entered in sort of wacko coordinates?
I think so. And I think we may be looking at something, what did they call them? The parts of space that are negative mass that he was telling Stamets.
Yeah. Do you suspect that it was because they brought back Admiral Cornwell, who is the person that sort of like has the goods on Lorca in terms of taking his command away? And so that this was the only way that he was going to be able to prevent Cornwell from being able to report him back to Starfleet Command?
I mean, that's certainly possible. Also, you know, when the Vulcan admiral was talking to him and saying, you know, we want you to come back, we're going to give you a medal, basically, you could tell he was gritting his teeth through that. And so it's like the read on him is like, OK, are you really calling me back to give me a medal, or are you calling me back to do something else to me?
Yeah, it's like the Goodfellas of like, oh, Captain Lorca, come back to the starbase. You're going to be a made man. We're going to.
Yeah.
We're opening the doors, Captain. So don't worry. Nothing is up. Yeah, I did think that that was a little suspicious.
Yeah, I mean, heck, he might have even promoted him, which would have taken him out of the ship while not necessarily being a punishment. Clearly, Lorca doesn't want to be on desk duty.
No, he does not. So do you think that we may end up with the crew of Discovery having to stage their own mutiny in the back half of season one, and Michael Burnham might have to become a reverse mutineer?
I mean, it's possible. We did see one very short clip in the previews of the next half season is the Doctor saying to Lorca, oh, you planned for this to happen all along, or words to that effect. So it's possible. I think it would be an interesting full circle there if she has to mutiny again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's where they're going. But with Lorca, you just can't tell. I was just settling in before the end of this episode to, okay, Lorca's come around. He's a pretty decent guy now. He's talking about exploring after the war is over. Got to protect this peaceful species down there. And then he does this.
Okay, so that is something that bears watching. I mean, what are these coordinates that have all of this wreckage from these Klingon ships, though? I mean, that's the weird part for me. Like, how does Lorca know to take them there?
Well, I wasn't sure if it was wreckage from the Klingon ships, or did the wreckage travel with them? Was that wreckage from the ship they destroyed?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, that's a really good question. We have some bigger questions, though, to discuss, or maybe on of equal significance, these questions, because there was a lot of stuff going on with Ash Tyler, and I know that there have been a lot of fan theories floating around about, is Ash Tyler who he says he is? And I think that we got some answers in terms of Ash Tyler's story, and other things are equally still mysterious, as he was brought back face to face with Laurel in this episode. But I think that we can jump to some conclusions and then still have some things that are up in the air. So I think we could take off the table, David, Ash Tyler is not some sort of mole that he is aware of, that he is somebody else who is in disguise, who's working to undermine Discovery.
No, I agree. He believes that he is who he says he is.
Right. But.
Yes, but.
Is he who he says he is?
I think not. I think it goes back to that he is Laurel's old buddy. T'Kuvma's inheritor, I guess. And I think what we saw as flashbacks that were supposed to be torture, I think that was the surgery that turned him into the human appearing person that he is today.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we talked about this, and I was sort of like was walking on eggshells a little bit more about these theories. But I think that, you know, it would be hard to do this podcast and not discuss it more. So we're going to discuss a fan theory. If you are super sensitive about this, don't want to hear this kind of thing, then I will give you opportunity to, tune out. But there's been a, big theory on the internet that could Ash Tyler actually be the Klingon Vok who we saw earlier in the series and prominently in the premiere, who had something to do with Laurel. And then they talked about how you'd have to give up everything to be able to, you know, redeem yourself. But Ash Tyler seems to have no recollection of being a Klingon. So could he have had some sort of surgery to augment himself, but then is also like some sort of Manchurian candidate who believes he's a human? That's the part that's so wacky.
Yeah, I mean, they would have basically had to capture the real Tyler and then, you know, recreate Vok in his image. And then replace all of his memories as well. So there must be something planted in there, you know, some way to trigger it. And that's what Laurel was talking about when he came to visit her when she was on in the brig, when she said something about soon. Something is going to happen in that regard. But I mean, I know that this is, you know, older Federation technology, but what kind of surgery did they do that would make him so seem to be a human? I mean, he had to have been medically evaluated after he got back from the, you know, his time in Klingon jail.
Yeah. And so furthermore,
nobody noticed,
right, that Ash Tyler had to have been a real Starfleet officer also, because right. It's not like that he would have come back and they're like, well, we don't have any record of a Starfleet officer. But if you say you're a Starfleet officer, I guess here's a command on here's a post.
Right. So that's what I'm saying, that they, you know, they had to, you know, capture the real Ash Tyler and then remake Vok to look like him. I mean, did they take all the skin off of the real Ash Tyler and, you know, just do a full skin transplant basically to give him his face and body? But you've still got differences in organs, in bones. I mean, I remember on Next Generation when Worf got injured one time, they talked about all these redundant systems and everything else. And I don't know how you surgically alter all of that.
I don't know, but they did turn Deanna Troi into a Romulan one time, and that was pretty convincing.
Yeah, I feel like that was just, you know, skin deep. I don't think that would have survived necessarily a medical evaluation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what's going on here. Do you have a gut reaction? I mean, I said last week, I didn't think that Ash Tyler was a Klingon. You know, it seemed like that he had too many memories and talking, too much knowledge about different things going on back on Earth and seasons. And he's been falling for Michael Burnham. So I was sort of out on this, but I do feel like that after this episode, I feel like I am coming back around, that there's something going on here.
My best hypothesis is that he is Vok and they've done something to him to make him think that he's Tyler and look like he's Tyler. And at some point we'll get a hand wavy explanation as to what all that was.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll figure out exactly what's going to be coming up in the second half of the season, or at least we will at some point learn the truth about what's going on here. But let's talk through some of the finer points from this episode. And so we see that the Klingon ship, the Klingon, what is it called? The Klingon death ship.
The sarcophagus ship.
Yes, they are on their way and they are going to potentially blow away this innocent planet. Paavo's in big trouble, David.
Yeah. And it was interesting because at one point, either Lorca or the Admiral, I can't remember which, I think Lorca said, this ship can, you know, destroy the planet in the blink of an eye. And I'm thinking, would they have a Death Star? I mean, I know it's a big ship, but to destroy the whole planet seems a little bit over the top.
Yeah, I noticed that also. I think they said destroy life on the planet. So I don't know if they could just like not necessarily like blow Paavo to smithereens, but at least like do enough damage to the like living organisms that they would make it inhospitable.
Yeah, possibly. And, you know, speaking of the living organisms there, I feel like that was kind of just left unfinished because the people, organisms, I don't know what to call them, that live there, the Paavans, they sent out this invitation to the Klingons, this invitation to the Federation, and they were going to try and make peace. And that's the end of it. So the Klingons come, you know, the Federation comes, Discovery blows them up, and we never hear from the Pavans again.
Right.
It just seemed odd that they went to the effort of reaching out and then nothing.
Right. Well, maybe that they will set up some sort of like a Kelpian commune where Saru and his buddies can go on like a retreat a couple times a year.
It would turn. Yeah. But every time they want him to leave, it'll turn into a big fight.
Yeah. I guess they could just set up shop there on Pavo. So we see that Lorca gets the order to retreat to Starbase 46. Don't engage the Klingons is what he's told. And he agrees, all right, I'll come back to the Starbase. And so he ends up going back to the Starbase at warp speed. And he says that that's because they have some sort of a problem with the spore drive. And unbeknownst to Lorca, he says, all right, Stamets, you go to sick bay. And you need to get checked out by the doctor, not realizing that there's actually a lot wrong with Stamets.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a
interesting way to bring that full circle there.
Right. And part of this ruse was that they actually had to do a workup on him in sickbay. And so they will then discover lots of things wrong with Stamets.
Yeah, I guess the white matter in his brain is doing weird things. Mm-hmm. And I'm not exactly sure what that means, but I wouldn't want anything in my brain to be doing weird things.
So. Right, right. And Dr. Culber is going to get to the bottom of this. And of course, that he is very upset. Now, are they just dating Dr. Culber and Stamets?
I think they're married.
Married couple.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that he finds a lot of things wrong with Stamets, and you wanted an issue, Lorca, you got one.
Yes, he did. And then he said, well, just send it to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure exactly what he's doing with it then. Okay, send it to me. Well, we never saw him send it to the admirals after that. So I'm not sure what all he did with it at that point.
So, David, we end up coming up with this plan for what we need to do. And so Lorca ends up coming up with this idea to do 133 spore drive jumps around the Klingon ship. And they were going to be able to place sensors on the ship. People were going to beam over and be able to notice these tiny algorithm changes in the Klingon sensors. Like once they put those things on the Klingon ship, they'd be able to detect the Klingon cloaking signature once they had enough data, but it would take 133 spore jumps.
Yeah. And, you know, let me go back to that for a second, because the whole Federation has been studying this cloaking technology. And, you know, the Admiral even said something to the effect of, come back, we've got our best scientists working on it. And Lorca gives his crew under 3 hours to figure it out. And lo and behold, they do. Why didn't he just give them under 3 hours before? It could have meant they didn't have to go to Pavo to begin with.
Yeah.
I mean, they spent, what was it, 36 hours or something like that on Pavo? Why not just give them under 3 hours? They could have had it done already.
Yeah. Well, maybe somebody else would have come up with this idea, but they didn't have the opportunity to beam people onto the Klingon ships.
I guess, but at least come up with the idea.
David, they say that a task will like expand to fit the amount of time you give it. So if that's why deadlines are good, they make people sort of like, you know, you have a science paper due in 2 months. You're not going to start it until the night before anyway, right?
Well, that's certainly true in my experience. And that's why I said he should have just given them 3 hours a while ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Lorca knows what he's doing.
Right.
And so they need to figure out who's going to go over to the Klingon ship. And Ash Tyler is immediately, you know, considered to be a person that you want on that assignment. Was this reckless on the part of Captain Lorca to put Ash Tyler in this spot, considering that he had spent 7 months in the Klingon prison?
I don't think so, because Tyler, you know, to all appearances, was fine. Even later, Burnham says to him, you know, it looked like you were just letting it all wash over you and you're putting up a good front. So I don't think Lorca had any reason to believe that there was any PTSD there.
And then Michael Burnham volunteers for the job. Lorca says, no way, no way we're letting mutineer Michael Burnham end up on this submission.
Yeah. And you know, that's another question. I think we've, seen this question before come up as to why is Lorca taking such an interest in keeping her safe? I mean, I know he wanted to, he wanted to use her brain. He wanted her to work for him. But he's got lots of people there doing that. Why does he put his foot down, at least at first, and say, no, she absolutely cannot go? There's something else going on there. And there was something brought up about this on After Trek. And Sonequa Martin-Green said that it's because they're so similar that he wants to keep her safe. I think that's BS. I think she was giving a BS answer because they've already recorded the rest of the season probably, and they can't give the real reason, because I think we're going to find out what the real reason is, but for now we just don't know.
I thought it was more that he couldn't trust her being the mutineer, that he didn't really believe that she was going to follow the orders that he was putting out there.
That's not what I got at all. I understood it as he wanted to keep her safe, kind of like several episodes ago when he sent Tyler with her to get Sarek, and he said, you better bring her back safe or don't come back at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the same situation of he didn't want to put her at risk.
Yeah. Interesting. We'll see if we end up getting an answer on that. So Stamets will reluctantly agree to make these 133 jumps. Lorca is going to talk him into we could discover new universes. Come on.
And save trillions of people. Trillions. That's a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, were they counting each pavo in the trillions?
I don't know. I think they were counting everything on every planet in and around the Federation.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, that they're really talking about the Klingons as this existential threat like the Borg.
Right. That, yeah, if they win this war, they're just going to wipe out everybody.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we see Stamets getting loaded in, and Tilly, always there to put her foot in her mouth. She's just like, oh, I'm so glad that you finally told him about your symptoms.
Yeah, that was so bad.
Classic Tilly.
Yeah. And apparently another thing on After Trek, there was a scene that had been cut, I think, from the previous episode where she was so eager to tell the doctor even then, like last episode, that she almost did, and she restrained herself from doing it. So it was just bursting to come out. So as soon as she saw something, that's when it popped right out there.
Yeah, we didn't get a lot of Tilly these last couple episodes.
No, not a whole lot. I think that she was mostly used for character development, especially for Burnham.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, speaking of Tilly,
yeah,
I do have a question. Why is she still a cadet?
You want them to promote her?
Yeah, she's not in school anymore. She's, working on this, the most important, method of fighting the Klingons in the entire universe. At least make her like acting ensign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, acting ensign is an upgrade from cadet.
Well, I would think so. At least it's a real rank, not mm-hmm. just a, hey, kid.
I will say for Tilly, she does have the lamest job on the entire Discovery in that her job is just to all right, put in the new K cup for the spores, put in the new S cup.
I'm hoping she does other calculations besides that.
Yeah. No, I think she just is putting the things in there and like turning the handle.
Well, maybe that's why she's still just a cadet then.
Yeah. Okay. Well, she's the best in the fleet at it.
Yeah, she's the only in the fleet.
Yeah. Maybe she also fills up those canisters of spores.
Maybe she's getting extra credit at school for that.
Yeah. Okay. So then we see Lorca give a rousing speech to Discovery about how they're going to save Pavo and end the Klingon War. So get on board, Discovery.
That's right. And that was one of the points where I was like, oh, okay. See, he is a real captain. He's not this psycho that we saw earlier, but I think he just generally hides it well.
You know, I was making a comparison when I watched the episode. So we heard Lorca give like a pretty like rousing speech to the crew of Discovery. But then the Klingons also like do a lot of monologuing for their troops. And I feel like it does not have the same impact.
Well, I think that...
On me, not necessarily on the Klingons.
Oh, well, that's because they talk like this. And you have to read the... read what they're saying. So I don't think it does have that same impact on you.
It's just there's no nuance to anything the Klingons are saying. And I don't know if that's because of the Klingon language, but it, like if Lorca gave a speech to the crew of Discovery that like we end up seeing Cole like say in Klingon, it would be like if he got on the intercom and say, "Discovery, today we will win a battle of great importance." like <that's...
laughs> and they'd all go, yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Not again, a lot of subtlety. You're right. In the Klingons, in the way they talk or in the way they interact with each other, or as we see later in the way they fight, there's not a lot of subtlety, not a lot of, different maneuvers there. It's like you come straight at them and you hit hard.
Right. All right. So we see Tyler and Burnham on the Klingon ship. The Klingon ship does not seem to have any sort of like intruder alert or anything like that. Yes, their signatures appear to be Klingons, but I don't know if the ship sensors don't read, hey, here's two new life forms and a transporter's signature that just showed up on this ship.
Well, apparently they couldn't tell that Cornwell was still there and alive. So, and that she was human.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they must just not be too concerned about that.
Yeah. Also, I felt like that the engineers on Discovery did not do Ash Tyler and Michael Burnham any favors with the like giant trash cans that they needed to yes. set up with like glowing lights. Like, couldn't they have made something that was like a little more inconspicuous?
Yeah, even the guy on After Trek made fun of that. I mean, it's like, not only is it big, it's glowing, it's talking in English.
Right.
And it has a Federation logo on top.
Transponder activated. Everybody, yeah. Just to let you know, this is a transponder that is giving away the cloaking signature, now active, thanks to Michael Burnham and Ash Tyler. Shh. Yeah. Put this thing on vibrate.
Yeah.
Like, just give me text notifications on this.
Yeah, I guess they couldn't get it down to the size of an Apple Watch or something.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I guess it is what it is. They only had 3 hours to come up with it, but I mean, they weren't doing them any favors. So anyway, we see that there is a human life form that is nearby, and Michael Burnham really wants to go and track it down. We know it's the Admiral. We see Ash Tyler and Michael Burnham break into this room. I couldn't figure out what this was last week. Did you get any senses? Was this like a morgue?
Yeah, I think one of the Klingons said something like, "We found some sabotage in the death room," or something like that. And yeah, there was a pile of dead bodies there and the like. I'm still curious as to how Burnham's how she picked up the human reading, because every other time in Star Trek, you have to set for I'm looking for. Readings for biological readings or something like that. And she was just looking for the best place to stick this sensor pod. So did it automatically just pop up like, hey, by the way, like a Facebook notification, like your friend is nearby.
Yeah, she has like some sort of like a GPS notification.
Yeah, a human nearby. Huh. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I guess we'll just go get them.
Yeah. And so we end up seeing Ash Tyler seeing Laurel in that room, and he ends up having an attack. They will call this PTSD here in this episode. Now, do you feel like that the effects of PTSD in terms of like that? I know this is a very real issue that a lot of people are dealing with, you know, in modern times. And certainly probably when we look back at the course of, you know, the history of war, probably a lot of people had. Will this still, you know, be an issue? Like, do you think that is this something that do you feel like that there will be some sort of like technological advancement that people will still be dealing with this some 200 plus years in the future?
Well, I think there's probably ways to treat it, but there were none of those ways available. Except when the admiral just says, snap out of it. Oh, yeah. Okay. You know, I mean, you say that enough time and apparently that's all it takes is it, to snap out of it. Now, I do think this all could have been avoided if Burnham had her phaser set to kill instead of apparently to stun, which I don't understand. Why would you go to the Klingon ship and not have your phaser set to kill?
Right. I mean, if you wanted to have some sort of a mercy on these Klingons, I mean, the whole point of this mission is that you are trying to unlock their like cloaking signature so that Lorca could blast them to hell with photon torpedoes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would have been better if it had been another glancing shot or something like that, that better explain it rather than, oh, I mean, when I saw her shoot Laurel, I thought, oh, OK, well, there goes that character. And, you know, last time we'll see her. And then she starts getting up. What is going on here?
Mm-hmm. All right. So Michael Burnham is able to make it to the bridge. She's able to get the second sensor online. Then Discovery is going to end up doing a jump so that the Klingon ship will then turn its cloaking device on.
Right. That way they can start getting the readings and, you know, they can do their 133 jumps.
Yeah. And so just so I understand, the 133 jumps are so that Discovery could sort of like see the Klingon ship at like every different angle.
Yeah, I think so. It's, you know, you've heard of triangulate. This is 133-gulate. I don't know.
Now, there was no way that they could have done this with probes.
I mean, maybe. But if you send out a bunch of probes, then first of all, the probes have to circle the ship so that, you know, the ship knows, if they're paying attention, I guess, that, hey, what's going on? Why do they have all these probes around? And they can just start shooting out the probes. And also, it doesn't advance the plot line as much.
Yeah. Now, David, tell me if this is crazy talk. So once you beam Michael Burnham over to the Klingon ship, and then you're able to also, you know, be able to track Michael Burnham and obviously beam her out of there, can't you just lock on to Michael Burnham's signature or her coordinates and then just, you know, blow the Klingon ship away?
You might think so, but I think that it wasn't just blowing up the ship. They needed it for
I understand the mission at large, but right. I mean, it seems like that if this would work, you know, it feels like that the answer would be that once the Klingon ship uncloaks, just beam something on board that ship. And then when they go back and cloak again, then you can track their movements.
I mean, yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. I guess, like I said, in the long run, though, it's better just to eliminate the cloaking technology entirely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So we start making our jumps, and Stamets does not look like he is going to make it past like 30.
No, he's not looking good at all. Luckily, the doctor had fitted him with something to inject him with something to keep him going better, I guess.
We see, you know, Stamets really struggling through that. We'll also see Admiral Cornwell and Ash Tyler talk for a little bit. Tyler having all sorts of these crazy flashbacks in terms of what happened to him, as we were alluding to earlier in the episode. And so back on the Klingon bridge, we see the Klingons, you know, really carrying on about the humans and how stupid they are. And that's when we are going to see Michael Burnham try to cause a diversion. And what a diversion Michael Burnham is able to cause, because it seems that though Michael Burnham is able to completely get the Klingons to forget about the mission that's going on and Discovery making all these jumps, that they are all just there for the fight club between Michael Burnham and Cole.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny, too. And even Lorca, he's like, OK, we're done. Why are they not shooting at us? Like, everybody was watching this fight, you know. And of course, the fight itself is something like, I mean, I know she played to his supposed honor, but yeah, it's something like out of a James Bond movie where it's like, aha, but before I kill you, Mr. Bond, I will tell you my whole plan and give you an opportunity to escape. In this case, it was, before I kill you, I'll give you an opportunity to fight me and delay everything that's going on.
Yeah. And Michael Burnham ends up saying, hey, I killed Takuvma.
Yeah. And so Cole wants to, you know, basically hang her on his wall as a conquest, but she's already a conquest. She's there. You have her.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
And Michael Burnham is able to, you know, hold up pretty well against these Klingons. Not the first Klingon battle that she's had.
Right. And, you know, I think she's lucky that it was just him, not everybody. And, you know, her Vulcan martial arts training, I guess, was good enough, along with, like I, you know, had mentioned earlier, he just goes straight at her. You know, it's like he just keeps pounding and trying to use strength, whereas she is using more technique.
Yeah. And Cole ends up saying that Michael Burnham's death will secure his place as ruler of the Klingon Empire. Is that going to cinch it?
Well, he made a comment earlier about how this will, you know, bring in the last remaining holdouts who were, you know, still worshiping Takuvma, basically, that, oh, if I can kill the person who killed Takuvma, they'll be forced to bow to me.
Yeah. Well, once this big fight is going on, then the Klingons are too distracted. I love this part where Lorca puts the drops in his eyes because he knows he's going to get ready to blow up the Klingon ship and he wants to stare at it. So this was really great.
Yeah, I enjoyed that, too. It brings that whole thing of staring at the ship blowing up. It, you know, brings that back around.
Yeah, it was you just took that extra step like, oh, I got to see this and put those drops in and then blew that Klingon ship up and obviously beams everybody out. But not before Laurel is going to jump on Ash Tyler.
As she had previously, apparently.
Yeah, whoa. Yeah, those were some crazy flashbacks. And the Klingon ship was outfitted with such nice bed sheets.
I did not notice the bed
like
sheets.
The bed sheets were like being like thrown all about on the Klingon ship.
I missed that part.
Yeah. Laurel has very nice bedding.
Well, she was the captain, after all, so I guess that comes with some special perks, and, you know, good bedding is one of them.
Yeah, okay. So we end up with Lorca checking back in with the Admiral. This is when they're telling him about how you're going to get the Legion of Honor.
Yeah, I mean, great for him, I guess.
Yeah, but as we mentioned, that we have our doubts as to whether or not Lorca is actually going to be getting some sort of a commendation.
Right, and then there's also, you know, the Admiral signed off after telling him that.
Yeah.
But then Lorca goes and tells Stamets, well, they want to give me a medal, but I told them they should give it to you. Well, we didn't see that. Did he call him back?
Yeah.
After, hey, you know that medal you were going to give me?
I was thinking.
Give it to this other guy instead. I mean, I guess it's possible, or it's also possible that even then Lorca knew, we're never getting back there for anyone to get anything.
David, did you notice a reaction from Lorca when they told him that, oh, we have Admiral Cornwell here?
A subtle reaction, I think. It was kind of like, oh, yeah, great.
To me, I didn't see much of anything, and I feel like he would have been like, wait, what? Did you say Admiral Cornwell is here? Like, that's weird. Like, because it did feel like the last time that he wanted her gone.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think he wanted her gone. I think he knew that perhaps that mission was a trap, and I don't think he expected to see her again. But I also think that he is very good at controlling himself when it comes to these situations. Apparently, except if, you know, you're in bed with him right away first thing in the morning, then he pulls a gun on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. It takes him a little bit to wake up in the morning. All right. So we see Tyler and Burnham. They end up, reconnecting after this whole incident. And so, Michael Burnham is talking to Tyler about, you know, what happened there, who was that person. And he basically ends up saying, like, he did what he had to do to survive in the Klingon prison.
Yeah, and I think we saw what that was, and it involved the tossed around bedsheets.
Mm-hmm. Right. Are you sensing deception from Ash Tyler here?
No, I think he's embarrassed, you know, that he doesn't want to come right out and tell her exactly what he had to do. You know, some things are best left unsaid, but I think it's pretty clear what it was that he had to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. And so we see that Ash Tyler and Michael Burnham are going to have it. Now, is this a first kiss? Where is this on the timeline with that they kissed a bunch of times in the Harry Mudd timelines?
I don't know. I don't know. If
I don't
it's
think
the
that they kissed
kiss
in the timeline that stuck.
We at least didn't see it in any timeline since then, but I think there's been one episode since then or two. I can't remember.
Yeah.
And so it could well have been the first official timeline kiss.
Okay. All right. And then we see, Stamets, we're going to have one last jump. He'll do it. Like, he'll just get in the machine one more time just to save everybody. And then he's getting out the game. He's retiring.
Yeah. And I knew as soon as he said that, I mean, he said it like a couple times, and I knew, something horrible is going to happen here.
Yeah. Because they made such a meal out of that. It was like, okay, right, one more time just for old time's sake. I'll do it then, and then that's it. And then Starfleet can examine me.
Right. And, you know, it's Chekhov's one more time.
Right. So do you feel that potentially Lorca sabotaged the jump because he knew that, okay, they're going to take Stamets out of here. They're going to pull me out of this command, that the Admiral is here. The walls are closing in. We got to come up with some escape plan.
I think it's certainly possible. And also, you know, I was thinking about where he had the doctor, I mentioned this earlier, he had the doctor send that report directly to him. Did he find something in that report that showed him, it would only take one more jump for him to, get to this level of brain activity or whatever.
Jumps.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know necessarily if it was a specific number or if it was like the equation or he did something, but it definitely does feel like that there was some sabotage on Lorca's part.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. And so Ash Tyler, he has some nightmares about Laurel. He goes down to the brig, and then he asks her, "What did you do to me?"
And she didn't really give him an answer.
Yeah, soon as she tells
right,
him.
Right. And that goes back to, you know, what I had said earlier, which I think the soon is he's going to, there's going to be some sort of trigger. Something is going to happen where he regains the memories he had as Vok.
Yeah,
that's what I think anyway.
Just the whole thing, though, that it looked like in those repressed memories that he was getting like his Klingon parts like sanded off. So it's either like, is he physically Vok that they turned into Ash Tyler? Is Ash Tyler a real person that they sort of then just put these memories into? Like, where is the actual person that was Vok?
I think he is Vok,
mm-hmm.
and I think he has the memories of the real Ash Tyler implanted and right now kind of covering up the Vok memories. And I think he probably has, you know, the, like I said earlier, the face of, maybe even the skin of, so you can fool any, you know, biological detectors. And I think that, you know, they tore apart basically the real Ash Tyler and kind of piecemealed him on top of Vok.
Mm-hmm. And were Vok and Laurel romantic before this all happened?
They certainly looked like it when they when she helped him escape from Cole, she certainly looked interested.
Okay. So we see Stamets then go back into the spore drive and tells the doctor that they're going to go see an opera after this one final jump, really like hanging a lantern on the fact that something is about to go terribly wrong. And then we end up seeing Stamets screaming.
Yeah. And just, you know, the one little piece of somewhat interesting information that I saw in After Trek was that opera apparently served as the basis of the musical Rent.
Oh.
Which both the guy who plays Stamets and the guy who plays the doctor are known for having been in Rent.
133 spore jumps. How many minutes is that?
Didn't they say they were doing it in like 4 minutes?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So much less than in Rent.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Finally, they make this jump. They don't know where they are. The computer is reading it as just being in the middle of nowhere. They cannot figure out where they are.
Right.
What's happening?
You know, it gets back to just looking around, going, "We have no idea where we are." Now, again, if this was part of Lorca's plan, he again is putting on a very good acting face.
Mm-hmm.
Because he seems to have no clue either. But again, I guess I wouldn't expect him to say, "Ha ha, my evil plan is successful. We have no idea where we are."
Yeah. But what is the end game here?
It's a very good question. Stay out long enough to figure out a way to fix Stamets.
Nobody's taking my ship. I'll stay on the run forever with Michael Burnham and Ash Tyler and this Klingon.
Yeah, I don't know what the end game is. That's a very good point. Does he just disappear for now, or does he conduct his own kind of rogue war against the Klingons if he can find a way out of this? But again, he has to get Stamets back into the spore chamber again, which clearly is not going to work in his current condition.
But what they did to Stamets, I don't know if anybody else would volunteer, maybe outside of Michael Burnham, was that they just injected him with the tardigrade DNA. Are they out of the tardigrade DNA? Is it impossible to then, you know, recreate the circumstances that led to Stamets originally being the ship's navigator?
Well, if they were smart, they would have kept a store of it in their library.
Yes.
But they sure didn't seem to be, because otherwise, you know, you would have gotten multiple people. If you're starting to see a problem with one of them, it seems to me you line up several and say, "Okay, we're going to rotate through you so that you have time to recuperate."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would have thought they'd have done that already if they had more of the DNA.
Okay. Well, here we are at the end of this half season, David. What is your excitement level to see how this plays out in the second half of the season?
I'm pretty excited about it. I'm not as excited as some of the people I saw on Twitter. I think the Star Trek Discovery Twitter account retweeted every single person who tweeted out and said, "This is the best Star Trek ever," because they just blew up.
I mean,
that's
a little hyperbolic for 9 episodes.
Well, exactly. But, you know, they were blowing up Twitter on that. And so, yes, I agree. It is extremely hyperbolic. But
they've uncloaked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's good. I think it's certainly gotten better since those first 2 episodes. You know, there's still questions about what's going on and, you know, where it's taking us. I personally think prefer my Star Trek to have a captain who is trustworthy, not one who we have to question his every motive. But it is something different and something interesting. And
I love Lorca. If I was going to make a list of like what's working on Star Trek Discovery and what's not working as well, Lorca is definitely on my list of things that are working.
I was just thinking, you know, that Desilu Productions actually originally was behind Star Trek with I Love Lucy. So now you've got the new offshoot, I Love Lorca.
I Love Lorca. That's right. I think that's the hashtag. Hashtag I Love Lorca. Or I guess I Hate Lorca if you really don't care for him.
Right. And it's not that I don't. It's just that I wish we had a little bit more insight there. And I know we'll get it. And it seems like a lot of the questions that we had earlier, they answer along the way. Like, I think when I was on the first time in episode 2, one of my big issues was, how did they get this cloaking device? They were supposed to get that from the Romulans. Well, now we know by the time Discovery comes back, whenever they come back, this cloaking device, this particular one, is going to be useless to the Klingons.
Yeah, we figured it out.
Right. And so I think that they have done a good job of planting these things that, you know, people like me were a little up in arms about at the time, and they've managed to explain them away. So I'm sure, you know, we'll get an explanation eventually of what Lorca's up to. I'm sure we'll get an explanation as to why the spore drive goes away. It's, you know, just lots and lots of questions still.
All right. Well, David, thank you so much for coming on with me and talking through this season finale, mid-season finale of Star Trek Discovery. You could follow the great David Bloomberg on Twitter, at David Bloomberg. Anything else you want to touch on about Star Trek Discovery before we sign off?
No. Just looking forward to the next half season.
Okay. Do you think that we will have a time jump or anything like that, or do you think we'll pick up right from where we left off?
I think we'll pick up right from where we left off, because otherwise it would require a heck of a lot of explanation to say where
they
were.
But they could do it like in a captain's log, in like, you know, a captain's log, Stardate, blah, 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 blah. We've been in parts unknown for 6 months. Supplies are getting low.
Well, that's true. They could do that, I suppose. But I think they'll pick up pretty close to where they were, because you've got to explain where they are. You've got to figure out what's going on with Stamets. You've got to figure out what's going on with Tyler and Laurel. There's just too many things going on at the same time here.
Okay. All right. Well, great getting to talk about Star Trek Discovery here in this half season. Looking forward to seeing what comes up next. Of course, make sure you check out everything else we're doing on post-show recaps between The Walking Dead, the Game of Thrones rewatch, Mr. Robot, and more, all on postshowrecaps.com. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.